AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of Generational Talent, a sports podcast brought to you by the father and son duo of myself, Thomas, and
His father, Travis, right there.
And as you can imagine, we have two very distinct points of view with us being from two different generations, hence the name. We're going to bring you sports news, hot takes, and of course, our favorite betting odds and picks for the upcoming 2 weeks. This is a bi-weekly podcast, so obviously if news is coming to you a little late, that's your freaking problem.
Well, and I will tell you, for some of the segments, I'm going to try to be forward-thinking in some of our, you know, what's coming down the road and things like that, just because I do realize it's not every day.
But we're going to go ahead and get ourselves started. Of course, today that we are recording is June 16th, Monday. We're going to try to release this episode same day. If not, it'll be tomorrow at the latest. So again, most of this news, if you're listening to it day of drop, is going to be about as recent as you can get. And when it comes to our hot takes, most of those are also going to be pretty relevant to whatever's going on right now. We are going to have some debates that are more all-timers rather than current day stuff. But let's go ahead and get right into the news. Trav, what do you have for us?
Well, the first one right out of the gate, it was announced earlier. Matter of fact, I think it was yesterday, the day before, Rafael Devers went from the Red Sox to the San Francisco Giants. And here's my take on this one. I'm just going to throw it out there a little bit, or at least my thoughts. He is a good hitter, and this is a gentleman that, even though they got him listed as a DH, I'm pretty sure his regular playing position is either the corners, third or first, at times. And here's the thing. Great that he puts up great numbers for a guy in the infield. Don't get me wrong. I see 15 home runs, 58 RBIs, and a 272 average is pretty good right now. Is it $250 million good? Because that's the kicker. That's what the Giants will be on the hook for between now and 2033.
So looking at this, I got here that apparently he was the longtime third baseman with the Red Sox, but then was moved to DH when they signed Alec Bregman. And so now the question becomes, you know, with the relocation, what is he going to play? Apparently, he's pretty resistant to playing first.
Well, and don't get me wrong. From what I understand, I'll do a deeper dive here, but they're in need of a third baseman now. They're in San Francisco. So a lot of times, though, here's the kicker. If he was moved to DH, that's because the other guy was better at the position when he got there, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, not to say that he couldn't play the position, but I doubt he was brought there for defense. He was brought there for offense, which I will say is a good move on the Giants' part, because in order to compete, think about the Giants' division, Tommy. You've got the Dodgers in there. Good luck.
Yeah.
With the exception of, Colorado, that division's tough. You got the Giants that are playing good ball. I mean, I think they're in third place too. But they're in third place. You've got the Padres kicking butt. You got the Dodgers kicking butt. And then Arizona Diamondbacks. All four of those teams are kicking butt. So in order to compete, Giants need to make a move. They made a move. I just think it's a lot. These are good numbers, but, you know, he is only 28, so you are getting him at his prime, so that part is good, too. I mean, if you look at what, till 33, you're going to get him for 2033, you're going to get him, what, five more? No, you're getting him for seven more years, so 35, so you probably got him at his absolute best.
Yeah.
So, not bad.
Jumping into the next bit of news, obviously it's NBA Finals time. Right now the series between the Indiana Pacers and the Oklahoma City Thunder is tied at 2-2. They're heading back to Oklahoma City for that pivotal game 5 tonight. What are your thoughts on that?
So this game will be playing, tonight. We'll see how it goes when it goes to airtime on your podcast, right? How do I feel about it? I think OKC is going to win this. I think they're going to win the whole thing, but I'll give them credit. This game's tied 2-2, right, series-wise?
And it's been back and forth.
It has been back and forth, and Indiana's holding their own. I just, from a top-to-bottom bench included, Oklahoma City's so deep that I just don't know that they're going to be beatable. And I do see the line tonight as of the game is 9.5 points for OKC. So not to say that that's always a given, but I do think at home they're definitely going to win tonight and be up 3-2.
All right. We've got the Stanley Cup final right now. We've got the the reigning champion Florida Panthers on the verge of winning their second consecutive Stanley Cup, going up against the same Edmonton Oilers that they beat last year. Right now they're up 3-2 in the series. What are your thoughts?
I think it's going to be a hard road for them. You got the best player in hockey is on Florida. So you just got a lot of things going their way. You know, they're heavy favorites to win the whole thing. That always doesn't mean something. But I think in hockey, being that it's such a, it's a team sport, but when you have the difference maker of a player who's the best in the league, I think that's the edge. And the fact that this game is going to be in Florida, I think the chances of them just wrapping it up being done right now in front of their home crowd is pretty good. I suppose if they had to, I think if they lose this one, I will say that. If they lose this one, I think it could go to 7.
Okay. And then we've got Dallas Cowboys linebacker Micah Parsons reportedly seeking a large contract extension. And obviously Jerry Jones not known for giving a lot of those.
He almost never does. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a Jerry Jones fan in the sense of I can appreciate the guy wants, you know, to win at all costs, but he's so involved in his franchises and these decisions. And he makes the craziest decisions. I'll give you an example. You got a guy like Micah Parsons, and he is a beast. The dude is a stud, and I will look at him just like I do Hutchinson for the Cincinnati Bengals. These guys, the way the market keeps climbing so fast ahead of them, that's what they're doing, Tommy. These guys, they signed their contract 4 years ago, but you've got contracts like Myles Garrett that just signed his, yeah. And he's making like, I don't know, 40-something million a year.
He accepted money over a ring if you're going to stay in the Browns.
There's no question, and he took a huge contract. Well, what he did is now these guys are making twice as much as these guys made 2 years ago.
That's a bad precedent.
Yep, and so they're just not happy. So I get why, but I also am one of those guys. I'll always be one of those guys. Honor your contract. That being said, here's Jerry Jones, right? On a team that you held up, you dumped all your money. You dumped almost all your money, let's be real, into Dak Prescott and to CeeDee Lamb. Now, and I get, you know, you got to have a good quarterback. I get all that. But when you're paying the kind of money, which I believe he's up to almost $60 million is what Dak almost got.
Yeah.
To me, that would constitute wins, right? You would think, or deep into playoff runs, none of which has been the case. The Cowboys haven't been relevant since the 90s. And so with that being the case, and you handcuffed your entire team on two guys, Micah Parsons may want this, but what are you going to do? You pay him, chances are, especially with the NFL, which I love, right? Salary caps. You're going to have your entire salary cap, for the most part, tied up between three guys. And we all know in the NFL, you can't win with three.
Yeah, no.
You know, so I personally feel like, although Micah Parsons probably is deserving of a larger contract, I don't know where the money's coming from.
That, I don't know if Dallas is the team that's going to give it to him. Obviously, again, he's never been huge on paying out those defensive contracts. And you look at Micah Parsons, there's consistency. You know, a little bit of an injury there last year. But for the most part, the dude's consistent. His sack numbers have always been in the double digits. I mean, he's well worth the money. I just don't know if the Cowboys are the team that's going to recognize that. And right now, there's plenty of teams, I'm sure, that would kill for a defensive end like Micah Parsons.
Right, so. Right. Well, give you an example of that position when you're talking defensive ends and tackles. You know, all the guys that pressure the quarterbacks. Let me show you this. So we talked about Hendrickson, right, for the Cincinnati Bengals. He's been holding out.
He's just been getting screwed over by the Bengals. I think the Bengals are idiots for not giving that man what he wants.
I mean, the guy led the league in sacks, but give you an idea of what I was talking about. So check this out. So he right now is set to earn in the last, and when he made the deal, don't get me wrong, when he made the deal at the time, it was great. I think it was 3 years, 60 or something like that. So he's set to earn $16 million this season. Now, mind you, he led the league at second in pressures, number one in sacks, everything across
with
the board.
With no support.
No support.
Because the Bengals' defense is a joke, aside from Hendrickson.
Correct. So all of that being said, right, he's set to make $16 million. Do you know how much Myles Garrett's going to make this year?
I mean, it's closer to
40 million dollars he's going to make. So you can see the argument with these guys, but I will say this. When you sign the contracts, if I'm a GM nowadays, I don't know that I'm doing any long-term contracts. I'm doing like 2 years tops.
I wish the Bengals would have been smarter about it because, you know, obviously all the money went to their two wide receivers, which is great. Joe Burrow needs somebody to throw it to, but to me, when your defense is in such heavy jeopardy that it's in, I mean, you can't focus on the offense like that. You've got to spread that wealth. And if that means you give up Higgins, then you give up Higgins and you put the money towards the defense that is going to get you there.
Yeah, because you are right. I mean, if you look at the Bengals season last year as a prime example, they lost games by being outshined, outscored, not because they didn't put up points. They put up points all the time.
Yeah, no, you look at their first game against Kansas City. I mean, it was a prime example of just blow for blow for blow, and unfortunately, Kansas City had the defense to at least be able to stop them every now and then.
Yeah, that's the problem with Cincinnati, as we saw the whole year last year. They had to outscore to win.
And the frustrating part for them is, I mean, right now you guys have the potential to be Super Bowl champions. This isn't like Cincinnati that we've seen in years past. Like, right. You guys right now, this is your window.
Yeah,
so you're absolutely going to throw it away by completely ignoring half of the football team.
Yep. So I think if they can figure it out, great. But in terms of what you were saying about Miles Garrett or Micah Parsons, I look at it like this. I get it. But in the same token, you've got a team which I don't even think they have the salary cap space to do. In other words, what they probably have to do, and it's the sad but true thing that we see, is they'd have to do salary bonus like no other that has nothing to do with the contract. And the problem for his position, those guys get hurt.
Yeah.
Those defensive guys get hurt. I mean, it's not like quarterbacks don't get hurt. They do, but they're so protected.
Yeah.
And so are a lot of the offensive players. Wide receivers especially, you can barely touch them.
No, I agree.
So I don't know. If I was them, I would try to negotiate, but in the same token, I don't see it happening. I don't, and a large contract extension, I would not commit to these guys for, you know, 2 or 3 years tops.
Yeah.
Not in that position.
Now, you had a piece of news that I did not have on the list.
Yeah, that would be Bane, the Memphis Grizzlies star. I mean, and I say star, Tommy, this guy is legitimately a star. And the Grizzlies traded Desmond Bane to the Magic, and it was a blockbuster deal. To put it in perspective, check this out. They traded Desmond Bane to the Orlando Magic for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's good, Cole Anthony, and 4 unprotected first-round picks, and which with this year being a first-round swap. And I'm not sure where they sit. Orlando is at number 16 in this year's draft, and I don't know if it says where they're at. So they're going to swap their picks, but still, you've given up first-round picks for the next 4 years. And when they say unprotected, that means if, God forbid, Orlando is the worst team in the league, they got no guarantee because you got a lottery that comes into play, but you got a good chance. I've heard people going both ways on this because even though they gave up a lot, Orlando, I guess the missing piece from the puzzle, which I do get, this is a great outside shooter, is this young man. He's awesome, but you sure gave up a whole lot of stuff.
You give up your future at that point. I mean, because at the end of the day, unless this guy absolutely can turn your team around, you have given up the prospect of landing a solid draft pick over the next 4 years of your team's existence.
So to put it in perspective, so you have a kind of a little note here on where he's at. Bane is one of 3 NBA players last year that made 800 three-pointers and shot 40% from the three-point shooting range. And that's in the league since 2020. That's what he's done in the last 5 years. And he's one of only 3 guys that have those kind of numbers. So from an outside shot, he's great. He's only 26 years old. Last year, he averaged 19.6 rebounds and 5 assists. So he does every bit of the game well. I mean, he is a stud, but you are giving away future studs and a few good ones.
Well, that's when you look at basketball, it's so different than football, because even the best football player, you're not giving up 4 years worth of first round drafts.
Right. And looking at these players, that first player I mentioned to you, that Caldwell Pope, he's 32. He got 8.7 points, 2.5 rebounds, and 2 assists. So that was the best player that they got for that deal. So in terms of, they're definitely banking on those draft picks coming into play.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know, so I suppose in terms of immediate payoff, probably did go to Orlando. Like immediate payoff, you guys got an outside threat who's young and he's going to be a stud on a team that is getting better.
You're in win now mode.
Right. And so I get that. But I think long term, Memphis is going to be sitting pretty with draft picks galore all over the place.
Yeah.
To be able to fill his spots. But he'll be missed initially. I think right now, I mean, you know, if you're Memphis, that is not, you know, losing a 26 year old who's got those kind of stats. He's good right now.
Well, Memphis is praying for some draft stuff.
I think so. And they got, you know, they've got a young man in that Jay Morant, who is, he's awesome. He's just sometimes got a bit of a head case. So, you know, don't be bringing guns into a locker room, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you can't win them all.
Yeah.
our last bit of news here is a fun one. We've got our ex-Steeler star, Antonio Brown.
Right.
Currently, has a warrant out for a potential murder charge there. And he is, as of at least 11 minutes ago on here, Yahoo Sports, he is blaming the media for this murder charge. But in general, Antonio Brown, talk about probably one of the most aggressive falls from grace ever. And I will say, obviously, we'll never know. I mean, everybody's going to assume he has CTE. You can't really diagnose that until after they're dead and you can look at the brain. But, I mean, I put it all on Vontaze Burfict. That one hit Vontaze did on him.
Oh, knocked him silly.
Yeah, I mean, the man was never the same after that. But, you look up Antonio Brown, it just gets crazier and crazier.
So in the latest news is, yes, he does face a charge of attempted murder with a firearm, according to the warrant reviewed by many of us media outlets, right? The charge is based on a shooting that Brown was allegedly involved in during a celebrity boxing event in Miami. Brown was detained by the police after gunshots were fired at the boxing event, which was hosted by an online streamer. And so here's the thing about him, let's say he is innocent. and that he's not guilty of this, which could be, right? I mean, I guess everybody's entitled to their day in court. But my point is, geez, it's always something with this guy. He's always got something tied to him. And usually it is something violent. Like, he's got a violent issue. No, you know, not that he's in that P. Diddy category, but he's obviously got some violent issues.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I remember when this event happened. I don't remember Aiden Ross or somebody. I don't know streamers all that well. But I remember him getting, you know, not necessarily arrested, but detained, and they did release him. They released him that same day. He went all over social media talking about how somebody had stolen his chains. He had chased him down. The video footage at the time was kind of, you couldn't quite tell exactly what was happening. You definitely hear shots get fired. But again, he was sent home that day, so you assume it was all good, and then obviously some new video comes out. Now, well, all of a sudden, he's the one who fired it all.
Yeah, I was going to say, according to this video, I guess there's witness reports. They're saying, according to the warrant, witnesses told police officers that Brown was the shooter, and two shell casings were found at the scene. Brown was unarmed at the time he was detained, but the man he allegedly punched during the altercation told police that Brown began to run toward him with a firearm after the fight and had already been broken up and shot at him twice. I don't know how you're going to debate that. I mean, I'm no attorney and I'm no courtroom, but I mean, if you've got witnesses, including the guy being shot at, that's like, he's running at me with a gun shooting at me. I don't know. What is it he missed?
Yeah, no, I don't know how you bounce back from this. And again, even if he does manage to get out of all this and charges are minimalized and he's not fully arrested for a long period of time, it'll be something new. It'll be something new in a few months. And don't get me wrong, I find it hilarious, not obviously him shooting people, but some of the stuff he posts on Twitter, like, the dude is unhinged. Like, there's no doubt about it. He's not going to seek help. He's the Kanye West of the NFL at this point. But it is at least going to keep for some interesting news and keeps us having something to talk about.
Well, and the thing with Brown, you are right. And sometimes, you know, influence comes into play. We're seeing it across the board, even outside of sports, right? And so I think with him, I will say this, though. People are eventually, it happened with Rodman. It happened with a lot of these guys that deal with shock value. Sure, you know, you have that going for you. Now, mind you, he's got an audience. I hear he's got a pretty powerful podcast, and I think he's a pretty powerful influencer at times. But in the same token, I think your antics, people do get tired of. And eventually, even like with Dennis Rodman, you ended up just being kind of a clown.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I'd have to agree.
Credibility goes out the window.
And with that, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap up our sports news segment. We'll catch you again in the Hot Takes segment 2. Welcome back to Generational Talent. Me and my father are back in the studio here, and we're going to go ahead and do some hot takes. I've got some topics that I typed up. Want to hear your take on it, Father, and we'll see if you and I are on the same page or we differ.
Okay.
But right off the bat, Saquon Barkley, are we going to see some repeat success with his sophomore year at the Eagles, or are we going to see some downhill slopes?
That's a great question. You know, and it's funny because I revert back to, I'm a big, as a lot of people know, and obviously the listeners will get to know, I'm a huge fantasy football guy, and I'm just a football guy in general. If I had to pick my favorite sport without question, both to follow and watch and all that good stuff, it's football. But that being said, I know, and that's a hard one for him because when you're talking about trying to follow up, he was a stud. So do I think he'll be able to match everything? Probably not. I'll be honest. Maybe, but I also got to think, there's that little talk of a Madden curse too. They put him on the cover of Madden and those poor guys seem to, you know, if people put any faith into you know, those types of, you know, bad luck type deals, who knows? But I don't know that I don't think he'll have the same, you know, bounce back year there as he did this past year.
No, I mean, you're talking about a dude who just had his 2,000-yard season. The production was insane.
Off the charts.
And of course, that's a 2,000-yard season. Granted, obviously now we have, you know, more games in the season than we've done in the past when people were able to break that barrier before. But he was able to do it with one less game. So he would have been able to break it years ago with those same stats.
There you go.
But, I mean, he also didn't really play the last game, too. He could have really, really racked up some numbers, but he chose to sit it out and stay healthy for his team and then, you know, didn't do crap in the Super Bowl because they were way too focused on him, which, again, you know, people who would say that Saquon maybe didn't do much in the Super Bowl, I would counter that with saying he's the reason that they were able to throw the ball in the Super Bowl. 100%
agree. 100%. They took him out, which freed up the rest of the team. It's like when you double up a wide receiver. That stinks for that receiver, but not for the number two guy.
Yeah. No, do I think Saquon's going to be able to match his success? Probably not to that extent. I don't see him obviously having a big fall off unless, of course, there's injury.
Right.
I could easily see him having a 1,500-yard season. I don't see that going anywhere. I would be more concerned if the Eagles went and picked up some all-star running back in the offseason or in the draft, but I don't see that happening. Mm-hmm. I think they're still going to be pretty reliant on him. Do I see the Eagles themselves being as good as they were last year? No, I don't. I don't think Jalen's got it in him. I think he's a great quarterback, but I think he's way more system than we realize. And I think, you know, you look at his wide receiver cast with Smith and Brown. I don't see him being able to do it. You know, again, I think a lot of things kind of fell into place, and I think Saquon was a huge part of it, but I don't think Saquon's going to be able to do as much, which would then put more on him to throw, and I don't think he's as accurate of a passer as we would like. I do see them being a playoff contender for sure, but I see a lot of other teams getting to the Super Bowl ahead of them.
I will say this. I think Saquon at like 75% of last year is still an awesome Saquon for any team.
I was gonna say, it's still a top 10 running back.
Yep. So I think he would taper off. And I do agree. The only thing I disagree a little bit is I do think people like to doubt Jalen Hurts. And even though I would agree. He doesn't put up like crazy numbers or anything like that, but the guy does win and he puts his team like in positions to win all the time. They rarely get beat out.
No, I mean, I think he's good. I don't see them making it to a Super Bowl again. Right now, at least over the course of this season, I don't see it happening.
I think I could, you know, this is way early to be sticking my neck out, but I do agree. My opinion is Detroit's got the inside edge on this year. I think Detroit's going to win this one.
I'm curious to see what Detroit NFC looks like without Ben Johnson. I am very, very, very curious because you never know how much to attribute to the OC versus the head coach, but I do think Ben Johnson was responsible for a lot. And obviously their defense is, with as much injuries as they had, still stayed relevant, which was unexpected. I do see Detroit going for it, but part of me wonders if their Super Bowl window's closing.
Well, you could be right, and we're going to see, because the talent on Detroit from an offensive standpoint is solid. So if the coach did mean a lot, you're going to see it. And I'm not saying he didn't one way or the other, but the talent is still on that team.
Yeah.
So if the new coach can come into play and keep it going, to me, that's the way I would look at it. I would come in going, well, it's not broke, so I don't have to fix this.
Yeah.
From defense had some work, but the offense, I would think, as long as you protect your quarterback, that team's too good. There's depth everywhere, too.
Well, if you look at Detroit, if they are able to retain a very healthy defense this year, I could see them going much farther because they were able to go as far as they did with, I mean, just secondaries all over the place on that defense. Yeah. Or it's just one of those things we'll have to see, but I
had a lot, there were a lot like when you're talking defense, they were a lot like Cincinnati's issue where they had to outscore people.
Yeah. Which they were able to do a lot better than Cincinnati was.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. So we've got NBA final game 5, Trav, you picking the Pacers or the Thunder?
I am going to stick with the Thunder. I do think they're going to win this game. And like I said, if they don't win this game, could be a little interesting, but I do think they win this one tonight.
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and pick the Pacers. I think they have a lot more to lose in terms of just, granted, neither team has a finals ring, which is good, but I just think that the Pacers are going to want it more. I think we see, well, if there's one thing this finals has been good about, it's, you know, last-second turnarounds and comebacks. Yeah. So I see the Thunder going into it. I see them blowing a bit of a lead in the fourth.
Here's what I would say to that. If that were to happen, this is one of those games, though, where Halliburton will have to show up, you know, because he's the buzzer beater you're talking about. He's the one who's won games single-handedly. But in the same token, when they've lost games, and he's good, I like him, but when they've lost games, he's been like single digit, 8 points. So I think if that Halliburton shows up tonight, sure. If it's the one that is kind of hit and miss, and I don't know if he's going to be hit on a home game in Oklahoma City game, but maybe. But if he has a big game, I think you're right. If it's anything like the others, Oklahoma City's got him.
Do you see this going all the way to a game 7?
I do think this could go, because it seems to be this one's following the old tract of home games.
Yeah.
Everybody's winning home games. So if that continues, because I think like tonight, I think Oklahoma City is like a 9-point favorite tonight. They're heavily favored. So if that keeps up, it could be any sport for that matter. I love things going to 7 games.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's always much more exciting than a sweep.
Yep.
All right. So we've got the Caitlin Clark effect.
Ugh.
Now, the question is, when it comes to the Caitlin Clark effect, obviously people attribute that to the huge ratings boom that the WNBA has seen because of her play and everything like that. And on the flip side of the Caitlin Clark effect, the not-so-positive stuff would be mainly her treatment by the media and other players, which can be very toxic, I would say. What are your thoughts on the Caitlin Clark effect as a whole? Do you attribute all of the success and the viewership to her? Do you think that she played a pivotal role in it? And what's your thoughts on the treatment of Ms. Clark?
Well, so I will say this. Do I think that she plays single-handedly plays a huge role to the NBA, WNBA getting to where it's at? I do. Do I think she's the only component? As time goes on, no. I think it's drawing attention, and there are some other key players and individuals, and they've done. I think the WNBA has done a great job capitalizing on this, but I will say some of it is almost infamous capitalizing. I mean, there's bad press that is drawing attention to this and putting the WNBA on the map too. So I think it's a combination of, I don't think it's all positive attention, but it's kind of like when you're dealing with that turd of a kid that you got at home, right? He's craving attention, even if it is negative.
Yeah.
I think that's the take here because I do think some of it is very toxic. And do I think there is some, I don't know if I would go as high as maybe saying discrimination, maybe, but do I think that that race scenario is getting played a lot into this? I do, and I think it's unfortunate because I think from what I'm seeing, I'll be honest, I think from what I'm seeing it on the reverse side quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, some of these young ladies are having some major issues, and some are denying what they're saying, but I think from the sheer eye test, she's getting a brunt every night, and the physical play and just the way they toxically talk about her, it's kind of crappy.
No, I'd have to agree wholeheartedly. I think, you know, obviously being a straight white woman in the WNBA, you know, she wouldn't be the first one who's been in that role. Obviously, Diana Taurasi would be, you know, one of the
amazing
elites.
Player.
Mm-hmm. But I think just because of how much media attention and so many people accrediting her to the WNBA success, it's put a target on her back. And I would say the biggest thing, you know, for like the Angel Reese's of the world would be you can hate somebody without having to mention the color of their skin.
Or hate them as a person. I mean, geez, or because of their skin. I'm like, if you hate because, you know, it's kind of like this. I look at it like in the old days. You look at the way Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, you know, they were those pinnacle players, right? You know, now I will say I was young when those guys were in their heyday, but that I think that notion of it being a white versus black thing is ridiculous. But I think, you know, it gets played up at times. But I think more than anything, you just had an amazing rivalry, and those two are the best players in the game.
I was gonna say a sports professional rivalry is fun to watch. I mean, yep. Regardless of the race or anything like that, I mean, it's fun to want to beat somebody that you would consider to be your, you know, equal.
Yep. And I think nowadays, too, everybody, and when you think about, well, kind of like what we're doing right now, right, in social media, in media in general, the more you can placate and get on to this, you know, soundbite, it does draw attention to the league, and it gets more where the drama's played out, right, and more. But I will say this. She, in my mind, undoubtedly is the best player in the WNBA.
Yeah, I don't think there's really much of a question on that. Yeah,
so you can say what you want, whereas, like, if you're comparing this to other leagues, right, the NBA back in the day, well, there was the argument who's better, Bird or Magic, yeah. Bird or Magic. I mean, and you do see that. I think it was good for the game, but they didn't make it about race. You know, there are people that did. Don't get me wrong. There are people that would gravitate to the guy they might be recognized with or relate to.
Headlines, yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of. And I think in the WNBA, they accentuate it. They like fuel that. They fuel
90% of everything that's talked about. Yep. And at the end of the day, I mean, there's no doubting that the WNBA is getting a lot more attention. That you can't debate that. Whether or not you attribute it to one person's one way of looking at it, but at the end of the day, even if it is attributed, and Caitlin Clark's the reason that so many more people are watching, be happy about the fact that once they're tuning in, if it's not her playing, they're still going to be watching.
I'm just not a fan of when there is reference made to the color, no matter which way it's coming from. I don't think it's right that, you know, there's talk about, you know, every time there's a comment made on one side, it's the white girl. They'll say that. And I don't get that because I don't see where it's fair or appropriate to be referencing, well, that black girl.
It has nothing to do with how they're playing.
And nothing to do at all. I think it's a great rivalry. I think it's great. I think when you see the way that plays out with those girls, Angel Reese and her, it's going to be good for the WNBA long term because your ratings will go through the roof.
It's the Manning Brady of the WNBA.
Yep. I just think when you have incidents like they've got, from what I understand, on a hot mic, they have Brittany Griner that made some, you know, a derogatory comment towards, from what they're saying, towards Caitlin Clark here recently, and she's denying it, but they've got it on a mic, and they're, you know, I guess you can read the lips, right? Regardless, I think if something was said or done there, that needs to be addressed. It's not a fair, it's not appropriate if it's coming one way.
It's gotta be addressed the other way.
You know it would be. And I think it should. I mean, I think it's like anything. You have racial issues and racial folks that you deal with on all sides all the time, none of which is right.
Yeah.
You know, but until it's addressed across the board to where it's not looked upon about who's saying it, it's a matter of what's being said. It shouldn't matter who's saying it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I'm going to add one to this here. So first off,
let's do it.
Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson, is he a bust?
You'd have to say right now he is.
I 100% say he is.
I mean, you'd have to, and don't get me wrong, he seems like a great kid. And every time he's interviewed, he's, you know, kind of a first-class kid, but it's not translating on the field.
What I'm seeing here is I'm seeing Jameis Winston. That's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a dude who, again, huge arm, likable guy, but not the guy that's going to take you far.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think you look back to last season, the one big media headline for a short period was when he asked to be sat out because he was tired.
Right.
And show me the NFL team where your quarterback is ever asking to sit on the bench. It doesn't work. I mean, the last time you can really look back and see a quarterback who wanted to sit out rather than fight for his team would be, oh, the Bears quarterback who everybody hates.
Cutler?
Yes, Jay Cutler. Uh-huh. I mean, when
it's amazing. All you have to say is Bears quarterback everybody hated, and yep, he's the one.
I mean, and not that everybody hates Anthony Richardson. I think you have very different personalities there between him and Cutler. But you have somebody who's not willing to give it all for the team. It's not going to get you far. Or Cam Newton refusing to jump on the ball in his Super Bowl loss. I mean, decisions like that, the effect of the leadership, I mean, you're not going to be able to get far.
You look at the NFL. Prime example. Name a top-tier quarterback who's not clearly the leader.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't happen.
I mean, not if you want to win. I mean, because you can have quarterbacks on there that aren't the leaders, but those are your middle-of-the-pack guys that aren't leading by example, I guess would be the best way to say it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, even...
First one in, last one out, all that.
And, you know, you're going to all learn this as we go. Tommy and I have been Seahawks fans our whole life. Prime example, like him or hate him, right? Russell, when he was at his prime, he led that team. He led every aspect of it. First guy on the field, last guy off, game tape, the whole nine yards.
Now he's just a corny, weird dude.
Yeah, now, exactly.
He's not leading nobody.
He's not leading anybody. I think the skill set, Matt, you know, left the brains.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think in this case, great young man. Don't get me wrong. I think he is a bust. I do think he can be definitely in the league for a long time because everybody needs a decent backup. As it stands today, he'd be a decent backup.
Easy, yeah.
And stay in the league. But do I think he's a bona fide starter? Not on what I'm saying.
Well, and when he was drafted, it was boom or bust prospect. I don't think anybody really looked at this as anything other than a risk in which the Colts were willing to take. Now, on that same notion where I'm going to add here, Bryce Young, how do you feel about him as a boom or bust prospect? Because I honestly, that's one that confuses the heck out of me. I look at...
Me too.
Like, obviously, first year, I would have walked away saying he's a bust. But I do think that we saw some good turnaround this year. I also look at the Panthers. They're an organization that's not going to build around him properly. And so...
That's the thing I was just going to say. The cupboard's pretty empty. So, you know, how do I feel about him? I think he... And boy, you better hope he's... You guys traded the farm to move up one notch to get him.
One of the worst trades.
One of the worst trades. And so, as it stands today, you know, if it pans out... I mean, I think the second half of the year last year, he started playing a lot better ball with a team that... That's my point. It's an empty cupboard. I mean, that team just doesn't have a lot of, you know, generational talent on it.
Because you look at it, I would compare modern-day Panthers to, you know, the past 20 years of the Browns where it's a quarterback graveyard. You're sending these young kids out there and you're not equipping them with the right weapons. You're not protecting them enough and expecting them to be able to turn your whole team around. That's why you look at a Green Bay Packers and why they've so consistently had good quarterback play because they're not drafting somebody and throwing them right into it.
Nope.
And there's time to develop. There's no time for Bryce Young to develop.
They did not do that with him. They threw him to the wolves on that team. And again, a team that wasn't good. You know, so it's one thing if you're coming in and there's some for a prime example. You know, you look at the difference with C.J. Stroud. Okay, so here's a young man comes into a team. Now, mind you, that team needed some, you know, but they had some weapons. And he kind of came into it. And they had a very good offensive line. So he was protected, right? And you saw a young man flourish. Now, not to say that C.J. Stroud wouldn't be, you know, have a better, maybe a better, you know, start than maybe, you know, in Carolina, right? I'm not saying that he wouldn't have, but in the same token, you know, when you don't have any talent and you look around that team and your running game, your receivers, everything's kind of C's and D's.
Yeah.
What do you expect? I think the fact that they won, would they win last year, six games or six? I think that was shocking.
I would say the biggest reason you could look at Bryce Young as a bust is Jaden Daniels. Because look at Jaden Daniels. That dude walked into a Commanders team that, again, I would agree, like the Carolina Panthers, wasn't necessarily fully equipped to help a young man flourish in the NFL.
I wouldn't have thought the kind of year they had. No way.
But yet he managed to do so. I mean, you got the one wide receiver in Terry McLaurin. You're not going to convince me anybody else is even WR2 prospect out there.
Yeah, they're all seasoned E's.
And he's able to make it work. And so, yes, if you were to directly compare Jaden Daniels versus Bryce Young, oh, yeah, Bryce Young's a bust every time. Yeah. But the hassle is, you know, I look at also Caleb Williams, where Caleb Williams walked into a situation that I would say is better than Jaden Daniels and couldn't make it work. So that's a hard thing to look at. That's why, to me, I would say we'll know for sure whether Bryce Young's a bust within the next 2-3 years.
I think for sure. Same thing goes with Anthony Richardson. I don't know if he gets out of it this year.
Yeah,
there's a few in that category. Think about Will Levis. He's another one.
I think he's big bust energy. I think he's got one good play a game.
Yep, I think so too. And I think
stick to mayonnaise, man.
And now with Cam Ward, you're not seeing the light of day.
No, gosh, you know? No. They can call it a I don't even know if they are calling it a quarterback battle. I think they're just giving it to him.
I would give it to him. I mean, and from what I see, that young man we were talking about, a leader, and his composure, I think everything about him, all that you heard, whether, you know, from his college days and the way he's been while he's been on the field and with the personnel, leader, 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 leader. So yeah. I look at it going, Will who?
Yeah.
You know?
So obviously Aaron Rodgers, everybody kind of figured it was going to happen, but he is a Steeler now. Does it make a difference at all for the Steelers in terms of the long run?
No way. Not for the long run. I think immediate, you know, maybe this year, it depends. I mean,
I think they're an 8-win team this year.
Yeah. And they could
at
be
most.
They could be. I think, you know, what do I think here? I think it's like this. If he's protected and given time, could they win more than 8? Could they get in there? That team's got some talent. Yeah. Do I think he himself has it in him physically to do it? I think if he gets pressure there, if they get pressure on him, no way is he going to get into the playoffs.
I got two thoughts on this. One would be, had he, you know, became a Steeler prior to their draft, I think their draft would have gone completely differently, because I think you look at how Steelers drafted this year. They did not draft around a quarterback needing protection. The draft is strange. Also, their decisions on trades were strange, to where, again, if you look at right after the end of the regular season NFL, Steelers, you could argue that, yeah, one right puzzle piece and they're playoff contenders and Super Bowl contenders, and it was the quarterback. But then they started doing a whole bunch of stuff, and now all of a sudden I don't look at them as one piece away from being a Super Bowl contender. I look at them as kind of looking like a rebuild. So then to make the move to bring Rodgers in is even more confusing after the fact. And my biggest thing is, too, not that I think he's going to be an all-star. I have some opinions on Shadur that I'm sure most people probably share with me, but when they go to play the Browns, if Shadur does happen to be the player that, you know, is leading the Browns, we'll see one way or the other. But they could look kind of foolish for passing on somebody like Sanders if, you know, they are planning a rebuild and all of a sudden bringing Rodgers in. I don't understand what that organization is doing at all. But the part of me that frightens me the most in specific to Aaron Rodgers is I look at the Jets, although piss poor leadership across the board there, I think, you know, and Anthony Hackett
Woody Johnson, the owner.
Yeah. Nathaniel Hackett, sorry, should not be allowed anywhere near a football team. And I get he's Rodgers' buddy, but that dude's a moron. But you look at that team, not the leadership, the team, weapons and good defense.
Oh, they had a lot of them.
And he couldn't make it work. So I don't see how you're going to go into a less equipped Steelers room and be able to make magic where you couldn't do it with the offensive and defensive rookies of the year and Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner, a decent O-line to protect you. Like, you couldn't make it happen. So how all of a sudden are you going to help the Steelers get there? I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. What I would have done is kind of like what you said earlier, what I think they should have done, whether it was Shadur or not, debatable. I think, you know,
just in terms of a quarterback who has talent, right, who fell way far.
Because I do think drafting a quarterback, if your intent was to sign Aaron Rodgers, would have been perfect, because draft that kid, have him sit there for the year, learn underneath the vet, let the vet have the reins out of the gate. I think would have that, because that model does work. I think that would have made sense. Obviously, they didn't draft a quarterback, so that's not their mindset. So you're looking at, in my opinion, you're looking at a one and done. I mean, he either takes his team to the playoffs, and even then, he ain't going anywhere.
No.
I mean, let's be real. If Aaron Rodgers has a great year, in my opinion, with the weapons that team has, you can't compete with Buffalo. You're not going to compete with Kansas City. I think Cincinnati, you're going to have a hard time coming out of your own division with a win.
Yeah.
And Baltimore, I think all those teams are better than Pittsburgh, even if Pittsburgh does have a good year. I don't see Aaron Rodgers taking them above any one of those four.
Part of me thinks, too, and I could be wrong, but obviously Aaron Rodgers is a bit of a prima donna. I don't think I'm shocking anybody with that statement. No. I wonder, too, if they didn't draft a quarterback just because they knew he wouldn't sign on if there was one there. I could see him not wanting that mentor role.
Sure.
And I could see them not risking it and just choosing to not draft a quarterback just so they can retain him.
I think the funny thing with him is it kind of the same effect of Shadur, where, you know, he was running out of options, too, because everybody was filling their quarterback room. So if you're Aaron Rodgers, your options, let's face it, would have been the Steelers or the Saints. There's nobody else that would have touched you.
I really was hoping, and obviously it didn't work out, but I do know he tried. I was really hoping he would become a Viking just so his career would have mimicked Brett Favre's to a T. Steelers, Jets, Vikings.
Exactly. And then instead the Vikings went and got our backup guy.
Yeah.
They got Howell, which I think is a good pick. I think picking up Howell is a good move for the rookie, you know, that you've got a vet that, you know, I say a vet, he's only a couple of years in, but you know, in terms of played one full season, and although a lot of interceptions, you know, 4,000 plus yards, a kid can play.
So you got another Jameis Winston scenario.
Yeah. So he can come in, you know, your guy goes down, this guy can come in and keep you competitive. But I think Aaron Rodgers, his best days are way behind him. I think he's he's highly, in my opinion, way overrated. Yeah. Way overrated. I think he's so stat driven on his stats and his career being looked at that he forgets winning. Yeah. I think the Aaron Rodgers in his first 5-6 years was a way different guy than we're seeing today. And today, I personally feel he's maybe top 20.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a stretch for this year. I don't think he's, I would agree. I think they might, you know, if they win 9 games, they could possibly get in there, but I'd have to look at their schedule. Do I think he's going to carry the load when he's got to play Baltimore twice? He's got to play Cincinnati. I mean, half these teams, no, I don't think that team's going to hold up well. There's no way. I think those teams are way better than the Steelers.
And I think if he does, if he gives the Steelers their first negative season in, well, since Mike Tomlin's been a coach, you know, they've always been on the upside. If he gives them their first losing season, I'd hope he's done. I would hope.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be the case? I mean, Tomlin's had all kinds of different guys in there. Mason Rudolph and half these
and
guys.
And somehow managed to get a winning record every time.
Right. And if it ends up being where Aaron Rodgers leads him to his first sub-5, that would just be comical. The guy that,
I think,
you know,
so too.
And I will say this. It doesn't seem like too many things hurts his ego. That guy's got a massive
God,
ego.
No. All right. Last hot take here. Should Pete Rose be reinstated into the Hall of Fame?
I mean, I'll tell you, I think he should have been way before he passed. I think it was a joke that they, I'm not a big fan of this posthumously stuff. Because do I think he needs to get, sure. I do think it's ridiculous, but I wish they would have corrected this when he was still with us. And the only reason I say that is I get, you know, in a lot of ways he was kind of a puke. Not a lot of people liked him. He's not exactly your guy that you're going to want to go hang out with. And yes, betting on baseball, big time. No. Lifetime ban as a manager and yeah. I mean, you know, but as a player, man, how can you ignore what he did? And he didn't cheat the game.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's good that he's back in. I don't think he should have ever been out. I think, well, and we're going to get into it with the all-time debate here, but to me, there are substantial reasons why you could be, you know, no longer allowed into the Hall of Fame. I don't know if betting's one of them, if you're not betting on your team or you're not directly influencing those bets.
Sure. And don't get me wrong, betting is changing nowadays. I mean, now, I can sit here right now and make a bet. They are changing from the days of old, but it is a dangerous scenario. It's why leagues were so hesitant on having any professional teams, even in the state of Nevada, for that very reason.
I just think, you know, part of me, and more so with the NFL rather than anything, because I feel like the NFL gives out so many fines and stupid things for the dumbest reasons, but I do see a lot of hypocrisy when you look at these leagues and the fact that they are directly partnered with all these betting things, but then also push this agenda of anti-betting. But I'm like, oh, but you'll cash the checks that come MGM.
They're in bed with all of them. It's like special interest groups. I mean, that's the way you got to look at it with the gaming and the NFL. They're special interest groups who have their hand in their back pocket. So sure. And players, you know, that's what I'm worried about. I don't think it's going to be too far-fetched to say that there's going to be, decisions. There's going to be things that come that have to do with point shaving or a player throwing it or things that happen just because the bookies and the industry is, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that are being pumped into it. So do I think if I'm Joe Blow getting in front of some player that's maybe a kid that's on the brink and all of a sudden I want that kid to have an integral part of a game that decides a game or decides an issue.
Yeah.
And that kid walks away making more in that particular instance than he would his whole career. I see that kind of stuff happening at one point and that'll be detrimental.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to get into an all-time debate here, not necessarily a hot take. So all-time debate, was the steroid era good for the MLB and should players like Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, and Manny Ramirez be allowed into the Hall of Fame?
Short answer for me is absolutely not.
Interesting.
They should not be in there at all. I do think it was bad for the game in this instance. Now, there'll be arguments to make here, and it might be where your generation is coming from. Do I think the home run race, and because I was there for it all, right, when Bonds and McGuire Sosa and McGuire, Sammy Sosa and McGuire were going back and forth. This was going after Maris's record, which in my mind is the record. That's the record that stands up until recently with Judge. I think Judge is another one that now it's his record, in my opinion, because those guys did it ethically and no, with the testing today, I'm very certain Judge isn't roiding up. That being said, do I think it was good for the game? At that point in time in the late 90s, you had McGuire and Sosa back and forth and back and forth chasing a record from Roger Maris that was 1961. He got 61 home runs and that at that time beat Babe Ruth. So you had like substantial, like, oh my God, moments of Babe Ruth being the guy for years and years and years and then Sam and then Maris getting that. And then it stood for 35 years. to know that that basically got broke at that point in time, that was all cheating. In my mind, I mean, those roids addressed that, turned those players from 40 plus home run guys to 60 to 70 home run guys. It wasn't natural. They did cheat the game. I think a lot of them did. I mean, you've got your Sheffields, your Giambis, your A-Rods, your Clemens. All those guys cheated the game. So no, I don't think it was good for baseball at all.
See, now, I'll be on the flip side then. I would say, and you see it nowadays too, obviously they've reduced the amount of time between pitches, all sorts of stuff. There is a need, I think, to make the game of baseball more interesting, and you see it happen all the time. And that's changes from when baseball was first initiated, and you know, back in the day, I mean, you could scuff up balls, you could do all sorts of stuff, but they changed it up to where every pitch was, you know, equal, and all of a sudden now, in more modern days, we're making it to where it's a quicker game because baseball can be lengthy. I think baseball is my favorite sport to coach, not my favorite one to watch. Favorite one to coach.
Sure. Though.
And I think that, yeah, baseball can be boring. I think things like the steroid era, while poorly managed from a league's perspective, I think could have been a good thing. If there is a way to meet in the middle and to where, yeah, okay, performance-enhancing drugs are allowed to an extent, it's open market, just because it does make things more interesting. It shows what a human being is capable of, yes, with performance enhancement, but still a human being a human being. I think things like, you know, Barry Bonds going and knocking off a, you know, bajillion home runs does make that game a lot more fun to watch. And I think, you know, sometimes the MLB is the opposite of the NFL in terms of the NFL is it cracks down on fun all the time. And the MLB, for short periods of time, I think, do things that do make it a little bit easier to be a fan. And if there was a way that, you know, you could enhance a player without it necessarily being considered cheating, or at least to where it's all open and up in the air, I think that would be helpful. Because now, you know, we're looking at things like the torpedo bats in the MLB, mm-hmm. where people don't know if those should be allowed or not. And to me, it's like, but it's a bat that makes the ball go farther, which is more fun to watch. Like, we don't always have to hate on things that make it more interesting just because it does allow for certain players to do better. To me, everybody should be hitting off torpedo bats at that point. I'm not saying everybody should do steroids, but I'm saying if there was some ways to perform a little bit better, I don't know if we should always knock it. Now, you think that none of these guys should be allowed into the Hall of Fame because of that?
Absolutely, I don't. Because here's why I look at it. Because I hear what you're saying, and it is more entertaining for fans. The home runs, you know, chicks dig the long ball, right? The home runs do make it more entertaining. The problem that you're going to have, in my opinion, is it's one thing when you're talking about a guy getting a few more. But, you know, when you think about like a guy like, prime example would be Sammy Sosa, came out of nowhere. Now, this was a guy that would hit 40. Bonds is even better. Bonds is a guy that was a 40-40 guy. He was destined for the Hall of Fame no matter what. So the guy that for years was hitting 35, 40, 45, right in that range every year, all of a sudden now 71.
Yeah.
You know, it took it to the point where I'm a traditionalist there, because so that blows away a Roger Maris who hit 61 without roids and roiding up and all that good stuff. You got guys like Hank Aaron who has the home run record. He never, look at him, he never roided up. Ken Griffey Jr., you can tell, never roided up. I think when they roid up to then trounce these Hall of Fame numbers and being elected into that said Hall of Fame on those trounce numbers, in and by themselves shouldn't happen. And I would say in all the guys that we mentioned, with the exception of maybe a Giambi and a Sheffield, these are Hall of Famers that their resumes were good enough. They would have been in the Hall of Fame anyways. They didn't need to do this.
So I wonder then too, could there be that meet in the middle of like, okay, their records stand, but it's got an asterisk next to it.
Which they do they do that. I mean, you know, in the Hall of Fame, they have the, well, because you got that, right? You have seasons where we didn't play as many games. So, you know, there should be some merit to the fact, well, yeah, you get to play more games now to get these records.
Because to me, you know, I'm okay with a Barry Bonds holding a record, but I would want it noted that, you know, under performance enhancing drugs, whereas Roger Maron would be natural.
You'd almost need an entire wing then, because the problem is you had a stretch there for many years where, you know, and you're right. I think there's no question owners and management looked the other way because baseball was on the high.
It was whatever it takes to win.
And people were watching. I will say that when you got a home run record that at the time with McGuire and Sosa, it was neck and neck, back and forth. Who was going to beat Maris's record? I mean, Maris's family was there for the celebration. Now, Maris had passed away, but his family was there to watch McGuire do it. And McGuire was very humble in the same token until, you know, all of these, you know, reports and stories were being sold, you know, and then of course these guys were nowhere to be found. And you have guys like Rafael Palmeiro that just go on record swearing he still didn't do it when.
Well, and you have that too. Some people would make the argument that Big Papi also might have been roided up, but yet he was able to make it into the Hall of Fame because he never admitted to it.
Right. And evidence is a tricky thing. I think for a lot of these guys, I mean, and you had slimy things like Clemens, you know, attributing that to his wife, you know, there was his wife that was taking them, and, you know, and I think the better play is this. You don't have his name listed here, but he's a prime example of this. There was Andy Pettit was the pitcher for the Yankees and was a teammate with A-Rod and Clemens. He was a teammate with Clemens at the time. Now, how did Pettit handle this? He got out in front of it when it was happening. He got out in front of it and just totally admitted it. But he went in depth explaining to people on interviews and what have you, like if he was on this podcast right now, explaining how that happened. And he was honest. He said, you know what? I did. I took it because honestly, I did want to rehab quicker. I wanted to get back on the hill better than ever. And I did not want to be on the sideline. And so I took these things and I shouldn't have, but my intent was to get back on the mound. And I knew this would speed up my recovery. Well, he went on to have a pretty good career. People liked him too. He wasn't booed. Because he just owned it. He just got on there and owned it. He didn't deflect. He didn't lie, which all these guys did. Bonds, you're a liar. Yeah. I think everybody knows. He can say all day long that he didn't. Sure, he did. There's evidence all over the place. He's lying. Sammy Sosa lied. Mark McGwire lied. Palmeiro lied. These guys all lied. Under oath, lied, saying they didn't when they dang well did. And so when a guy like Pettit did, you don't hear Pettit mentioned in these, and yet he did the roids too.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Well, good. All right. Well, that is today's all-time debate. We're going to see you guys in segment three, where we throw out our top three bets for the next week or so. Welcome back to Generational Talent, the father-son sports duo, where we're going to talk to you now about our bets that we're placing this week. We'll start it off with you, Dad.
Well, so again, being that we're kind of looking at bets that are in the future, it's hard to do a game or a night. I mean, because they're going to already happen. But here's what I want to say on record. We'll see if I do well. If this show was to have aired today, as an example, I would put my money tonight on Oklahoma City to cover by 9. But that being said, I don't think it's going to happen. But we'll see if I'm right, and apologize if not. But I'm going to look. I've been doing this lately. I'm kind of into it. I'm going to be looking at golf. We've got the Travelers Tournament coming up. Now, the U.S. Open just happened. And I'll tell you why. I like to take a few golf guys. I'll be honest. I know it's not always the favorite bet. But where it's kind of fun from a betting standpoint is I bet on that guy and I get 4 days of if he makes the cut and he ends up being, you know, in the chase, I get 4 days of watching a bet play out and see if it does well, which makes it kind of entertaining from a guy who just, I really love to watch. I love watching sports, but when there's a little money on it, nothing like, do not bet your house payment or your rent on it.
Only bet what you can afford to lose, and don't chase your losses.
Yeah, both of which I've done many times.
And we live in Nevada, so we're like experts on that.
Exactly.
There are slot machines in our gas stations and grocery stores.
Yes, so. Yes. And chasing your losses, I'm also an expert at. I've done it many times. But here we go. So here, that being said, the Travelers Championship, it does start Thursday. The safe bet, that the heavy favorite this week is Scheffler. Scott Scheffler, he's a 2.5 to 1. So, I mean, he's a heavy favorite to win it. It goes from him to the next guy being Rory McIlroy at 11 to 1. So, like, literally, it's one guy that they're seeing win it. I'm not debating that. So, here's what I always say about that. Not that I want people betting the house, but I'm sure Scotty Scheffler is going to be in the hunt to win it. That might be the bet where you want to lay down a little more than you normally will. I'll tell you my bets. I don't go crazy. You know, I'll bet, you know, if I'm really wanting to bet big money, I'll put $20 on something or $25.
I didn't have a college fund growing up. I feel like people should know that.
It was overrated. I knew it was never going to be your thing. So why not just bet your college fund, right? So that being said, I think if you're going to put down some decent money, probably not a bad idea for a guy that can more than double it if he gets to win, and chances are he'll be playing for it. So that would be my first bet. If you're betting decent money this week, I think Scheffler's your guy in the Travelers.
All right. So my first bet is going to be a very, you know, close one upcoming in terms of when you listen to this episode. I'm going to say that the Oilers go ahead and take game 6 and we see Florida win it all in game 7.
Okay.
I think Florida, obviously reigning champs. I think, you know, when you look at it, Florida, like you had mentioned before, they've got the best player in the whole NHL. Mm-hmm. And I think right now the Oilers are going to want it. I think they're easily going to be able to take it today. But I think, yeah, we get into a game 7, and I think Florida, you know, shows them what they showed them last year.
I do too. And unfortunately for all you Canadians out there, that just means another year of your Stanley Cup trophy staying in the lower 48.
And the best part about it, like before we had recorded today, my father and I were talking, isn't that interesting that Florida, humid state, full of crazy people and meth heads. They're the ones who are winning hockey championships, there of we all go. Things.
And they are. They're winning them. So, and I think they're going to win one this year, too. Okay, now I wanted to do two dark horses in the Travelers Tournament just because it's fun taking on guys that have, you know, decent odds. One would be, I would say Rory McIlroy at 11-1 odds, and I think he golfed okay this past weekend in the U.S. Open, but I think he's thirsty, right? So I would say put some money down on him. Even if it's $5, that makes you, what, 55, 60 bucks? I mean, that's not bad on $5. My dark horse, though, I'm going Colin Morikawa. Morikawa has been golfing good of late. He's been, you know, top 10, top 15 finisher in every tournament. He is 14-1 odds currently. So I think, you know, you put $5 on that, you got $70 just like that.
So in the world of football in the NFL, I'm going to go ahead and make a claim here. And just so you guys know, in the state of Nevada, we're a little bit limited in terms of our online betting capabilities. Most of the time, you got to walk into a sports book. However, we are utilizing and not sponsored by William Hill. And then the other betting app I use is Kalshi, K-A-L-S-H-I. But I'm going to go ahead and make the claim that I do believe the Seahawks will finish the season with 9 wins.
9 wins. Okay, so possibly playoff bound then. 9 is always that on the edge. Like last year we won 10 and we didn't even make the playoffs.
And then there was the one year that we had, you know, a losing record and still made the playoffs. That was the year that we saw Marshawn Lynch do his thing, I believe.
Correct. We knocked the Beastquake.
Yeah.
Yeah, we knocked the Saints right out of it, and they were a better team.
Yeah.
Yep, except for Lynch on that day. So interesting you said that. So that's your take. I would say this from a betting standpoint. I've got all the futures. Now, these are the futures in terms of Super Bowl. And of course, you know, goes without saying that the favorite, it goes without saying, they're all pretty close, but the favorite this year going into the NFL season is the Bills at 6.5-1 odds. Okay, not bad. I mean, that's, you know, put down $10, $65. Now, that being said, then it goes Philadelphia, Baltimore, Kansas City. I like this one here with Detroit. I just feel, I don't know, and I felt this way last year, don't get me wrong, so I could be eating crow big time, because from a talent standpoint, and I think if Hutchinson stays healthy, that team's a force to be reckoned with. They're 11-1 odds to win the Super Bowl. So, you know, if you want to do something where you're going to have to sit on that ticket for an entire season, but you put $20 down, you can win $240 when you get your money back on the team to win the Super Bowl that, you know, isn't all that far-fetched. But do you have a team that you're curious about that you would like going, I think that team could pull off an upset?
I mean, in terms of an upset, yeah, gosh, who do I even potentially see doing it? I mean, I'd love to say the Bills, even though they're not an upset team right now. I feel like no matter what, the Bills are always going to be an underdog because they cannot, for the life of them, win a Super Bowl.
And those fans deserve it.
Yeah, no, you know, I think a team that will be surprising this year in terms of just, you know, do better than they did last year, I think the Bears. And I'm not a Bears fan. In fact, I'm quite the opposite of a Caleb Williams fan, but I will say they have done everything they absolutely needed to do in the offseason to really prep themselves. I think they've bolstered up that O-line like nobody's business, and I could see them having a really, really good season when compared to last.
I'll tell you this, the Bears would be 40-1 odds. So now, here's the interesting thing, though. I do agree with you. I think the Bears are in for a different season. I will tell you this, though, to win their division, now that's a bet you might want to take with them. And don't get me wrong, that's not going to be an easy one either, because you got Detroit in there, Green Bay, and Minnesota. Yeah. But they're almost 5-1 odds to win their division. So, you know, even if you think, well, even if they don't win the Super Bowl, could they win that division? Oh, they possibly could. I think Detroit's the biggest team they're going to have. Yeah, I was going
to
say,
Detroit might be a rough one. The Packers would be interesting. I'm so curious to see what Love can do.
As much as this will make you unhappy too, the Seahawks are the fourth team chosen to win their division out of our four teams. We're the least. Can you believe that?
We got Arizona. Cardinals
over Arizona's us? Ahead, barely. So it's 5.25 odds for Arizona, 5.5 for us. So I'm like,
that's wild. I suppose it comes down to Sam Darnold and whether or not he plays like he did last year. My final bet for this episode, it's a fun one. So again, I talked about Kalshi. Now, Kalshi is an interesting betting app. It's more or less stock trading based on certain options. It's confusing, but if you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. And I'm going to be a little bit different with this. So when I bet on Kalshi, I bet on stupid stuff. I bet on, you know, Rotten Tomatoes scores and what the weather in Chicago is going to be like the next day, all sorts of goofy stuff. And I've won stupid money on that. So I'm going to go with an F1 Rotten Tomatoes score. F1 obviously is Formula One, and that's the new Brad Pitt movie coming out. Uh-huh. Right now, the forecast is that movie is going to get an 87.9 critic score. And so right now, if you want to bet, and you want to bet that it's going to be above 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, it's a 34% chance. To give you an idea, $100 turns into 280. So, you know, do the math. I'm not going to do the math.
And what was the score on that?
Right now, it's projected to get 87.9.
On Rotten Tomato?
Yes. And so if you want to take the betting odds, you can also go with the above 85. That's a 57% chance win, turns $100 into 133.
But I would say above 90, this is the same gentleman who directed Top Gun Maverick back in 2023. Or
very good movie.
Yeah. I mean, the dude makes hits. Obviously, you got a winning combo there with Brad Pitt.
You're a Brad Pitt fan.
And it looks like a heck of a movie. It looks like a heart-pounding movie. So, again, betting app Kalshi, K-A-L-S-H-I. Not sponsored, but would love to be sponsored. That is where I do all of my fun bets, and there are sports ones on here as well.
Now, do you think he'll be able to carry it? Because here's the thing. I'm not saying racing movies can't be fun, but are people going to be enthralled into racing movies? Do you think there's going to be enough of the Brad Pitt drama element to draw them in, regardless of the fact that it's centered around racing?
You know, it's one of those things. If this was based off of box office numbers, I'd be a little bit more cautious. This is based off critic scores. Critics love a high tense movie. Like, to give you an idea, one of the more recent racing movies would be Ford versus Ferrari, which I don't know if you ended up seeing that one.
I did see that one. Yep.
And again,
I liked it too. I liked it. That's the one with Matt Damon and it had
Christian Bale.
Yep.
And right there, that's 92% critics, 98% people though. But did it make a ton of money? Not necessarily. I mean, it wasn't a bomb.
A lot of these critic movies don't necessarily make money though.
Yeah, but a racing movie, again, you know, you also got Brad Pitt, much like Tom Cruise, doing a lot of his own stunts. I mean, that man drove F1 vehicles at speeds of over 200 miles per hour in the movie. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of heart pounding, they did a lot of their filming, too, at actual F1 races. So it's about as realistic as you can get, much like what he did with Top Gun Maverick. Yeah. So, again, if you're a racing fan, that's definitely a movie to watch.
And when does it come out?
That is a great question. So
F1, because I see he's starting to attend premieres, so I know it's close.
Yeah, so right now I'm sure it's, you know, got some early releases, but it's, you know, mainstream release date is June 27th.
Oh, okay. So it's a couple weeks away tops.
And I will say, I'll give a shout out to him, not that he'll ever listen to this, but Joseph Kaczynski, the director of that movie, who also directed Top Gun Maverick. I got to meet him at CinemaCon. Incredibly nice gentleman. Nice. I let him know that it was the highest grossing movie we've had at my movie theater ever.
Nice.
And he was very happy to hear it and looks forward to us playing F1.
Okay. The fact that you met him and he was a nice guy tells me a lot, too.
I've met a lot of celebrities there. They're not always nice.
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah, it's just like athletes. Some are great. Some you're like, it's no different than, you know, country music stars and everything else. Some are great. Some are poo-poo head doo-doo faces.
Shout out Dierks Bentley, though, because he was great.
He's awesome.
Twice. Yep. He's a great dude.
Super nice guy inside and out. And he puts on great shows. Great guy.
And with that, guys, this is the end of the inaugural episode of Generational Talent. It is being released through the Desert Highway Radio brand, which will also have another show coming out, hopefully within the next week or so, called Mic'd Up and Mildly Qualified. That is a pop culture comedy podcast rated TV-14, not TVMA. but again, if you like listening to myself or my father, make sure you tune into anything else we release on the Desert Highway Radio, and we will see you again for the next episode of Generational Talent. We'll